Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging around with me. It's my pleasure, as always. And you're going to be glad you hung out with us because our good buddy Jim Ostroff is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Jim is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. He's our good friend Jim. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, good morning, Jim, and good morning all your listeners out there.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
You know, Jim, I was just telling the audience about this little dust-up that apparently my wife and I had with the FAA. We didn't know we had a dust-up with them until we got this letter telling us that the dust-up was over. But apparently my wife carried a can of spray starch onto the airplane, or not on the airplane. She checked it in our bags we didn't carry it on. We had it checked with the bags. When we got to our destination, we found that the spray starch was gone. And now we get a letter that says, you know, you carried a can of spray starch on at this particular date in this airport, at this airplane, and you know, you're a bad boy. You shouldn't have done that. This is hazardous material. So my question is why is spray starch more hazardous than hairspray?
Well, it probably is not among the products that are approved to be stowed in luggage. It could well be nothing more than that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I'd like to know the answer. I'm tempted to ask, but the FAA in the letter says they consider this matter closed. Jim, I can just imagine, you know, the next time, you know, I show up with some spray starch, the FAA comes up and says, "Put your hands up and step away from the spray starch."
Step away from the starch. I wouldn't push it.
I don't want to. I think maybe I'll just let this go. Folks, I don't want to minimize the hard work and the good work that the TSA folks do. They work so hard. They do a good job keeping us safe and everything. And they got a tough job because we're usually grumpy about, you know, having to go through all that and everything. It's not their fault. Mm-hmm. But I do have to wonder, folks. I just try to point it out to you that you know, if you would like to get a nice little letter from the FAA, check a can of spray starch through.
Mm.
But I don't know. It's just interesting how some things are okay, some things are not okay, and at what point in time does it start getting a little ridiculous, Jim?
Well, you know, that is the thing here, and where there are certain items, but there's just sometimes it seems almost random decisions are made. This is okay. That is not.
Right.
People don't know, and they get snagged. You know,
what still gets me though is the shoe thing.
Well,
I mean, that just really blows me away. I mean, Jim, one guy rigs up a shoe that didn't work. He was not successful. One man in the history of aviation tries to take a shoe bomb on a plane. One man years ago, and today millions of people have to take their shoes off to go through an airport security line. I mean, Jim, at what point in time do we just say, you know what? Give it your best shot, terrorists. We're going to live our lives. We're not going to. We don't want to be put through this kind of harassment all the time. Give it your best shot. We're still going to try to catch you. We're still going to try to find you, but you're not going to. I mean, in my opinion, when terrorists see Americans and or anybody else doing what we do at the airports, I got to believe they're saying, you know what? In a way, that's a win for us.
Well, yeah. I mean,
because terrorism is chaos, creating chaos.
It's creating chaos and creating fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, personally, I'd say we just can never give in.
Well, my question is, and I've said this before, and I don't mean this in any way except the way I'm saying it, folks. What's going to happen, Jim? I'm very serious about this. This is not a joke. What's going to happen when some woman gets on an airplane with a bra bomb?
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from there?
We don't want to think about the consequences.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, let's move on and talk about the letter and the U.S. economy. As you guys point out, when it's weak, it affects everyone. For the last several years, Jim, we've talked on this show with you folks at Kiplinger
mm-hmm.
about the hoping, wishing that the rest of the world, Europe and Japan especially, would sort of perk up a little bit and take a little bit of the stress off, the pressure off the U.S. to hold up the world economy. And so now that the U.S. economy is getting a little bit of a cold, we were kind of hoping, I was kind of hoping that maybe the rest of the economy could do that, could help out a little bit. It doesn't look like that's happening so much, does it?
No, it's not. And once again, it's been said before, and it absolutely is true, the U.S. sneezes, the rest of the world gets pneumonia. And the thing is that, you know, there are certainly growing economies in China, in India, and Eastern Europe, and that really helps. But the fact is the U.S. really pulls most of the weight. It does the heavy lifting, and it makes up a quarter of the entire world's GDP.
25% of the entire world's GDP.
In one country.
And it is more than double, way more than double, the closest economy, which is Japan.
Japan, and as we've discussed previously, many times larger than China.
Five times larger than China.
That's right. Five times larger than China.
About 15 times larger than India.
Probably about that.
Which surprises people, I think. A lot of people think that those two economies are huge, but they're not. In fact, together...
Mm-hmm.
Together, they only make up about barely over a fourth of the U.S. economy.
Right. So they have a long ways to go. The U.S., not only the largest, but it remains the engine of growth in the world. And,
primarily because of our consumers.
Oh, well, consumers, like you just said, how many trillions of dollars they spend with a big
mm-hmm.
T, and they do. You might say, in good times and bad, they have really helped advance really prosperity, and during
mm-hmm.
downturns have really kept it from being a rout. Most recently in 2001,
mm-hmm.
mild recession, as we look at it, it could have been a lot worse except...
The consumer came through.
They did. Right.
Yeah, but this whole decoupling thing that we've talked about in the past, and you guys reported on that this week on your website and in some of your extended coverage, the idea that the U.S. could decouple from the rest of the economy, sort of let the rest of the economy fledge on its own without us, that's been proven to be a myth, at least so far. It's 20 after. We're going to be right back with Jim Ostroff. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And by the way, folks, my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. The first one is where you can find all the things we do here every day, the show and the articles, the archives. The Brain Trust members, our newsletter is there where you can subscribe to it. It comes every Sunday afternoon by email, get you ready for the week ahead. And our blog is there, which you can go to jimsblog.biz too if you want to go directly to it. And check it out, and we update that every weekday. And, of course, our knowledge base, askjim.biz, that's where you can get small business answers right now. So I encourage you to check that out. Jim Ostroff and I are talking about what Kiplinger has to say in the Kiplinger letter this week. Jim, the impact on other countries, the impact on growth, on the world growth, is going to be a big deal because of the trade issues. And you know, I'm just wondering, Jim, what kind of a significant negative impact a U.S. downturn could have on China. You know, China's growing like crazy, but they've got some capital market challenges over there. And I wonder if our trade cuts slows down over there to them, that if that could be the same kind of a negative effect on what they built up over there that it does when a small business loses customers. And we so much of a small business's working capital is cash flow. And I just wonder how much of Japan's sort of their capital markets are being propped up by the cash flow from U.S. trade. And so I'm wondering down the road, you know, maybe in the next few months, if there could be maybe some kind of a major problem in China. What do you think?
I say pay close attention to China. What you've outlined is a real possibility. It's on the radar screen. People are looking. You know, China, of course, relies very heavily on exports to the U.S. and other Western nations. If their nations, our economies slow, so do our imports, and a huge chunk of that, you know, comes from China. So there really is some concern here, and that is over here that the U.S. economy, you know, may in this case hiccup. And China gets some real indigestion. It could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Now, one of the things that, of course, one of the things that that the politicians are hoping for, which I am four square against, is this stimulus package that they're trying to put together.
Well, yeah.
But you guys report that we shouldn't expect to see a lot of help from Canada and Britain. Now, we have had more rate cuts. So what the other countries, Britain and Canada, have done, they've helped out a little bit with rate cuts as our Fed has done. But in terms of economic stimulus, you're saying we're probably not going to get a lot from the other countries.
No, we're not. Actually, the big thing is that, as you had mentioned, you know, Japan is the world's second largest economy, and mm-hmm. they have no room to maneuver at all.
Yeah.
Japan's interest rates are just about zero.
It's been a sick economy, really, for almost 20 years now.
It has, and a little move up and a little down, but they're basically at zero. And do you go into negative numbers and sort of give people money with every loan they take? That might be an interesting mm-hmm. idea, but they don't have room to maneuver. And the same reason in the U.S. there's some concern about the Fed cutting again lower now, you know, the rate coming down towards 2%. Mm-hmm. And you say, previously they cut 0.75 a percentage. And you might say, did they do that again? They may be near zero.
Right, exactly. And that's the danger. And see, this is the issue. The Fed has the conundrum now of dealing the challenge of dealing between, you know, the horns of their dilemma are inflation and growth.
Right.
You know, and so the U.S. Central Bank has decided that they're going to err on the side of growth, meaning they're going to take their eye off of inflation a little bit in order to make sure that we don't get into too much of a negative growth situation. So they're going to let inflation run a little bit, and their monetary policy has been to try to boost growth. In Europe, it's the opposite, isn't it? They're really keeping their eye on inflation, and they're not concerned about growth, apparently.
Well, growth, honestly, has not been a paramount priority for most European nations.
Yeah.
It isn't.
And it's reflected in the growth levels they've had over the last several years.
Oh, absolutely. Like, even, I mean, this year, you know, in most of Europe, we can say the Eurozone, growth will be under 2%.
Mm-hmm.
It never is a priority. Other things are. And same token, that usually unemployment rates are far higher in Europe.
A lot of people are wondering, Jim, if part of the reaction to the growth versus inflation issue with the central bank has come out of Germany remembering what they call wheelbarrow money.
Oh,
in the post World War II era, when the currency wasn't worth anything and people were taking wheelbarrows full of marks, you know, German marks to the superstore, to the supermarket, you know, and I think maybe there may be a little memories of that that's causing them to react that way. Stand by, quick break, right back after these messages with our good friend Jim Ostroff. A lot more to come, a lot more good stuff right after these messages.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Jim Musteroff is our guest and our good friend. He is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, let's move over and talk about the, folks, we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. Let's move over and talk about the global forecast. I'll just tick down through a few of these numbers. You've got the world at 2.9%, but when you combine, now the Eurozone does not include United Kingdom, does it?
That's correct. You are correct. It does not.
So Euro, but the two of them are expected to have the same growth level, aren't they?
Essentially, yes.
1.7% for both of them.
For both, right.
Which now for the U.S., that would be seen as an off year.
Right.
But for
right.
the Eurozone, that's not that not, far off from the last several years, is it?
Not that bad. I mean, if they can get 2% a year growth, that's pretty good for them.
Yeah.
And here, by and large, that is not. But for Europe, 2.5%. Is fine because they have other considerations. They do, you know.
Well, and the thing though, Jim, there are other things here though that are compounding the global economic situation. The weakness of the dollar is making our goods more valuable over there, but it's making their goods more expensive over here.
That's right. It does. Absolutely.
And also, Jim, I've canceled my 3-month sabbatical and trip over to go lounging around in Europe this year.
Oh,
you know,
good.
As I do every year.
Ooh,
we take off every. Don't you do that? We take off every take off for the summer just to go lounging around in Europe. We've canceled that this year because it's just the euro the exchange rate is too high.
It is very high in Europe,
so Americans are not going to be traveling abroad as much as they were.
No, and I know, having been in Europe last fall, I know it is painful.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's not good for their economy. Russia, look at Russia, 6.6%.
Well, yeah, I mean,
But that's a tiny economy, isn't it?
It's much smaller base, and really fed by energy issues.
Right.
Energy. So.
Right.
But even China, we think their growth is going to be, you know, really slowing this year to 9.9%. And it could be lower. It could be lower depending on mm-hmm. how long the slowdown continues. The U.S. and elsewhere, but it really is slowing. Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting thing, folks, to watch this, and I do think it's important for all of us to at least pay attention to the global issues that are out there. Even the smallest small business needs to realize, Jim, that they operate in a global economy, and you're no more than 6 degrees of separation. In your tiny little one-person company, how big you are, you're no more than 6 degrees of separation from a multi-billion-dollar multinational corporation.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And doing business around the world, and so I think it's important for all small. That's the reason we talk about these things on the show here, Jim, is to make sure that the small business owners are at least factoring in the global factors, the global issues that affect our overall future in terms of business growth.
They do, and they affect even the individual entrepreneur, the one-person shop, the one-person owner is affected by these things. You no longer can say that doesn't matter. It does.
Right.
Opportunities and challenges. It really does.
Jim, moving over into page 2, we've already talked a little bit about the Fed, and a lot of people believe that when they meet again in March, March 18th, that they will cut rates again. A lot of people are predicting that, and that, Jim, that's assuming they don't do anything in the meantime.
Well, there is some real possibility that the Fed may get spooked and act sometime later this month, even for some interim rate cut that they will then formalize later and perhaps go beyond.
Well, Jim, in terms of the global economy, right now, there really are day-to-day, week-to-week things that could happen that could make March 18th seem like a lifetime from now, couldn't it?
Well, it is certainly...
The next meeting of the FOMC.
Well, there certainly could. In an environment as we are now, if there was some report of some real economic problem, say in Japan, or if it became obvious that China's economy really was slowing to a crawl,
right,
that could have an outsized effect on the world economy.
Yep. And don't forget, the there's incredible amount of building going on in Beijing right now, getting ready for the U.S. the Summer Olympics, the 2008 Olympics. And the economy's off over there. Where's that money going to come from? It's 20 till. We're going to be right back with our good friend Jim Ostroff. When we come back, we're going to talk about some technological advances that I think you're going to be interested in.
When this whole world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff. He's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger Editor. Before we go any further, though, I want to make sure that you know about their website, Kiplinger.com, and their publications. Jim and I and Joan and I work off of, Joan Pride and I work off of the Kiplinger Letter, the weekly flagship that's been around since 1923. And of course, they've got the three biweekly letters: the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the one that's devoted to some of my heroes in planet Earth, the America's farmers, and that's the Agriculture Letter. And then, of course, the magazine. Jim, you guys got an outstanding finance magazine.
The Personal Finance Magazine. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you can subscribe to that, but you can also find it on bookstores, newsstands, that kind of thing, out there in the marketplace. And, of course, you can subscribe to all those at their website, Kiplinger.com. But don't just go there before you subscribe, folks, go look around on their website. It's really, Jim, you guys are doing a great job with that website.
Well, thank you. And it's not just words. We keep working at it every day.
All the time. And of course, folks, a lot of stuff on the website is free, just like it is on my site. But there are some things that if you want more of it, you need to be a subscriber, and you can go there and subscribe to any other magazines, any other publications, and get the access to the back end of the deeper stuff there. And they'll give you a 30-day free trial, too. And, Jim, there's a phone number they can call if they don't want to do it on the website. Go ahead.
Right. There's a toll-free number, 800-544-0155.
And tell them I sent you, folks. And then when they hang up, call them back, and then they'll tell them I sent you. Okay, Jim. By the way, Mike, here's something that's interesting. Just came across my desk from my crack research team here at Small Business Network, that Reuters is reporting that some shops in New York City have signs in the windows that they will accept euros. Now, I've never seen that before, Jim.
I have not. And
now, when I was in Italy about 4 years ago, the euro was on par with the dollar. In fact, it was actually a little bit less than the dollar.
Right.
But because of the strength of the dollar, it was like 95 to 1 euro to dollar.
Right.
The merchants in Italy would take a dollar for, it was a little bit more. So the dollar was just a little bit less in value than the euro, but they would still take the dollar as a pair on par with the euro because of what they consider to be the strength of the dollar.
The strength of the dollar, right.
So we didn't have to have euros for some shops. We could give them our dollars. But of course, most people in the United States, I've always felt the people came here from Europe, they have to get their currency exchanged. But apparently, they're doing it for them because of the strength of the dollar. It may be a good investment for some of these shops. You know what I mean?
But
the way the dollar's falling, they might be better off to take the euros and then exchange them later and get the benefit of it.
Well, it is considerably stronger than the
dollar
now.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Jim, let's move down and talk about technology transfer. You know, this is a very exciting thing that we have here in this country, and that's the technology transfer phenomenon, where universities, the space program, the military, all of our defense research that's being done. You guys have a great report on that this week in the letter on the difference. You call them spinoffs, but the classic term, the technical term, is technology transfers that have been arisen for that. So why don't you tell us about that?
Many different things. For instance, some place to do custom data searches, a company where you can create a personal profile that, you know, takes into account, you might say, the interests and expertise and professional needs, basically this, that, you know, that will help firms and individuals, you know, find what they want anywhere faster at lower cost. And even much faster video downloads, very important for businesses in particular, and big cost savings for, you might say, telemeetings and teleconferences.
This is an area, and these folks, these are all areas that have where the Defense Department, the defense research, was the headwater of this kind of technology. That's what it was birthed for. For our defense research, but it then migrated over to commercial application in the transfer, in the technology transfer. And Jim, this video downloading and the whole video conferencing thing, I think that is a capability that's going to explode real soon.
It will, and I mean, just think, we're in any. Not only conferencing, you might say, but if you want to make a presentation, even a sales presentation, or provide information, right now it's still not very good because it can take minutes to download and many people don't want to do it and they go buy it and the quality is not good. But what if all of those things can be basically presented almost instantly? It changes the landscape for many.
Well, and as the capability for video conferencing improves, Jim, that's going to be, in my opinion, that's going to be a paradigm shift in many ways, comparable to broadband.
Yes.
Back 6 or 7 years ago, when we were contemplating the broadband growth, I said when broadband capability, when the big pipes become in everyone's home and business and available inexpensively, I said that's when the world will change, and that's what's happened. When video conferencing gets to the point where anybody can have it and you can do it in real time, I think the hospitality industry and the airline industry is going to see a significant negative impact. Because if we can do it face-to-face on camera, that's going to prevent me from having to travel as much. And that's what I've been talking about that for a long time. Tintail, we're going to be right back with Jim Ostroff right after these messages. Stay with me. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, over on page 3, folks, we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. Over on page 3, you guys point out that how firms are a lot of advertisers of all sizes are changing the way they think about where they're pitching their ads.
Well, exactly, and this is a real sea change. After years of trying and work and experimenting, billions of dollars are moving from traditional advertising, TV, radio, newspaper, online, into emails, and as paid search. And the point is over here that all of these give businesses an ability to know, more or less, to really pinpoint, to the greatest extent possible, how their money, their ad money, is being spent, mm-hmm. and whether or not it is effective. If not, it can be shifted very quickly. You know, for many years, it was always this story about Frank Woolworth saying, I know I waste 50% of my ad money, but I don't know which 50%.
Right.
Now we can know. Now we can know. And that is why, too, also, big move here even to... It could be even cell phones, mobile devices with opt-in capabilities.
Right, right.
You opt in for that. They don't hit you over the head. And huge moves into digital displays, video billboards, and outdoor monitors in malls and other things. the message can be changed very quickly. You can focus exactly on the person most likely to see your ad and respond to it at that time. Mm-hmm. And it's less expensive, too.
There's a lot of stuff going on. So, folks, think about this. But there's also bundling of these things. There's, you know, a lot of the traditional media is bundling their traditional ad opportunities with digital opportunities.
They're
realizing that they can't just be, you know, they can't just have, like a newspaper can't just have an ad in the newspaper. You got to also have make available something on the website.
They do, and
so, spread that across the mediums.
Critical thing here, I got to say, is that this in many ways levels the playing field for small businesses.
Yep.
One person in many ways can compete with a General Motors or a Microsoft.
Yep.
In some
yep.
ways, it can be done.
That's exactly right. Jim, let's move down and talk about, this is something that the ladies in my organization like to do. They like to clip coupons. Tell us about this new coupon clipping method.
Well, you might say there are paperless discounts basically there's a company called Unicus Marketing that lets, you know, grocers post, you know, the manufacturer's discounts, you know, actually right on the store shelves. So where, you know, customers really make their buying decisions. So, you know, if a customer buys some item, a discount, you know, comes off at the cash register. And, you know, there were...
So you don't have to worry about the coupons.
That's right. And you just... It's there. You don't have to have it...
So everybody gets them, even if you're not a good coupon clipper, like I'm not, maybe I still get the discount, even though I didn't bring the coupon.
Well, that's right. And it makes you feel better. And also, you see there that it's an instant discount. So what I'm saying is that... you don't need to clip it, but it's also that decision is made right there at the point of decision making, and that is critical for building sales.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Jim, there's. Let's move over to page four in a minute or so we got left, and let's talk about this passenger. Several states you point out are trying to adopt what they call a passenger bill of rights for airline passengers.
Well they are.
Talk to us about that.
And basically, I mean, many, Arizona, California, Indiana, Michigan, and many others are enacting legislation that requires airlines to refund 150% of the ticket price if passengers are delayed more than 12 hours.
Hmm.
And they're also prescribing that airlines must do certain things, you know, for air commuters,
mm-hmm.
whether it be things like restrooms that have to work.
How about not sitting on the tarmac for hours?
Well,
I think there ought to be a limit to how long they can keep you on that airplane.
They're moving that way, but, you know, because as it stood now, for many
But
many
what's interesting, Jim, is that this is coming from the states, not from the federal government.
Once again, it's the states that so often take the lead.
They're incubating. They're the incubators of these
incubators
new
incubators and innovators.
Yep.
And innovators, they are.
Very interesting. So, folks, look for that and find out if your state's involved in this. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job again today.
Thank you, Jim, as always.
We'll see you next time. Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.